Blog Talk Radio.
Paul Gannon, for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgann. You can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGann. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow at GoForItGann. Great show lined up for you today, as always. Expect to be joined by our Hall of Famer, 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rowe. We're going to talk all things NFL with Willie. Also, we're going to be joined by a couple guys who were supposed to join us last week. They had some unfortunate incidents, and they weren't able to join us last week, but they're going to be joining us this week. Expected to be joined by former NFL linebacker Keith McCants and also former Major League Baseball outfielder Cliff Floyd. And these guys were a part of the ESPN 30 for 30 documentary Broke, and they're going to talk about that documentary. We're going to talk a little baseball with Cliff Floyd as well. I mean, as we all saw what happened last night, and let's go to last night and what we saw last night. The St. Louis Cockroaches, as I affectionately called them last year, and I'm going to continue to that nickname for this Cardinal ball club, because the reality of the situation, no matter if a nuclear bomb were to hit this country today, the only thing that would survive are the cockroaches in the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, this is absolutely positively crazy how this team seems to come back from anything. Nothing can hold this team down. Let's rewind August 25th, 2011. Your St. Louis Cardinals, not mine, but the fans of the St. Louis Cardinals. The St. Louis Cardinals were 10.5 games back. That was on August 25th. 2 weeks later, September 9th, still 7 games behind the Atlanta Braves. Still 7 games behind the Atlanta Braves. And somehow, in some way, they got into the playoffs last year. And somehow, in some way, they go against the Philadelphia Phillies. Against the four aces that the Phillies have. Hamels, Holiday, Lee, Oswalt. And guess what they proceed to do? Guess what this team, the Cardinals, proceeds to do? They're down 2-1 in that series, by the way. And guess what happens? Game 4, they beat Roy Oswalt. Game 5, they beat Roy Holiday. So This team, no matter which position or predicament you put them in, they find a way to get around it and get through it. And then let's go to the World Series. Game 6, team down to their last out on 2 occasions in that particular ball game against the Texas Rangers in Game 6. Guess what they proceed to do? Guess what this team proceeds to do? They win that ball game. They come back twice, and they win that particular ball game. Now let's go to yesterday. Down 6-0 to Gio Gonzalez, a guy that more than likely may win the Cy Young Award. Down to him. They're down to him. Down to him. Down to Gio Gonzalez, 6-0 after 3 innings. And guess what they proceed to do? They go into the ninth inning and they're down 7-5. And guess what the Cardinals, guess what they do? Down 7-5 with 2 outs. A strike away. On those batters, on Molina, on Freeze. And guess what? Guess what happens? Daniel DiCazzo. Go ahead, a two-run single by DiCazzo to tie the game, and then Pete Cosma puts it away, a go-ahead two-run single. That made it. That turned a 7-5 game to a 9-7 game, and ultimately the St. Louis Cardinals would have done it again. Wow. Wow. Down 6-0 to Gio Gonzalez in the Nationals. A guy that's probably going to win the Cy Young this year. And they come back. I mean, these Cardinals, they just cease to amaze you. Because at any point, at any time, they come back. They keep battling. They keep fighting. They don't go away. They're like cockroaches in some respect. They don't go away. It takes a lot to get cockroaches away. And it takes a lot to get rid of this St. Louis Cardinals team. They're not going anywhere, folks. And this is the same attitude that they had a year ago, the same fighting spirit they had a year ago. And I got to be honest with you. I was watching the game last night, 6-3, the sixth inning, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I think I can go to bed now. I think everything is fine. I can go to bed now, and when I wake up, the Washington Nationals will move on to the NLCS to face the St. Louis, not the St. Louis Giants, San Francisco Giants. Guess what? I woke up this morning, and I see a tweet. I saw a tweet, and it said that the Cardinals had won. And I was stunned, absolutely stunned, by what I saw, what I heard. But I shouldn't be, I guess. Because this is what you get from this Cardinal team. This is who they are. This is what they do. This is what they have done this past 2 years. This really should not be a surprise to anybody. You really should not be shocked by what the Cardinals did. No one should be. This team has found a way to come back from every and anything. Any and everything. In the Washington Nationals now, team, best record in baseball, a team who had Game 5 in their building, a team who seemingly had this game locked up, a team came into this game with a guy who's probably going to win the Cy Young and Gio Gonzalez, a team that was up 6-0 after three innings, a team that was up 7-5 after eight innings, a team that you thought would win it all. Not win it all, but at least win this series. And a team now that is going home. A team now that is going home. I mean, you look at it in the Beltway, Maryland, D.C. area. There was a lot of promise going into yesterday. A lot of excitement going into yesterday. You figure at least try to get one out of two. Orioles would go to Yankee Stadium and they would fall to Big CC and the Yankees 3-1. And then, in improbable fashion, the Washington Nationals, up 6-0 after 3, up 7-5 after 8, lose to the St. Louis Cardinals at home and ultimately would lose the series 3-2. I guess you can talk what would happen if Steven Strasburg was there. Could it have been different? Maybe, possibly. And you had the unnamed player talking about it and how upset he was that Strasburg was not there on the roster. I, if I was a Washington Nationals fan, would be upset and angry that Strasburg was not on the roster. I mean, you only get so many opportunities to do so many things and to be successful in life. And the same deal, you only get so many opportunities and so many chances to get to a World Series. The Washington Nationals, there hasn't been a playoff game in Washington in a very long time. Almost close to 100 years. A very long time. A very long time. And you have a guy, your phenom, one of the better pitchers on your staff, a guy that you expect to anchor your staff for years to come. Possible, may not happen, who knows? I don't know what tomorrow may bring. But I do know this, you had an opportunity this year to get to a World Series. You had the opportunity to get to the playoffs, you got there. You had an opportunity now to get to the World Series. You didn't get there. You lost it. And you figure with Jason Wirth, he battled in that game against the Cardinals in Game 4 where he kept battling and finally had that walk-off home run. You figure maybe all was going to be well in Washington. And then especially after getting off to a 6-0 start against the St. Louis Cardinals with Gio Gonzalez as your pitcher, you figured, yes, it looks like all is going to be well in Washington. But then, like I said, the improbable happened. The unthinkable happened. The unthinkable, the improbable was the St. Louis Cardinals, a team that doesn't quit, a team that does not go away, a team that you're going to have to make sure you kill, a team you're going to have to, it's like they're like cockroaches. That's a team you're going to have to make sure with your shoe that you smash him out. You make sure there's no movement before you declare that cockroach or this Cardinal team dead. That's what you're going to do with this ball club because they fight and they fight and they fight. And these MLB playoffs so far, a lot of great, great moments and none greater than what we saw game three with the Yankees and the Orioles and Raul Ibanez. Pitch hitting for A-Rod. I mean, we're not talking about pitch hitting for some schmo. We're talking about pitch hitting for Alex Rodriguez. $29 million Alex Rodriguez. That Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod. That guy. 600 home run Alex Rodriguez. Surefire Hall of Famer Alex Rodriguez. Number three in your lineup, Alex Rodriguez, and he gets pinch hit. Four, in the ninth inning, Raul Ibanez comes in the ninth inning and does the impossible. But only, it didn't stop in the ninth. He came back in the 12th and did it again. That's exciting times. That's exciting. And that was one of the greater moments in playoff history. Improbable. Joe Girardi, first of all, for him to make that move, that took a lot of stones. Took a lot of stones for Joe Girardi to make that move, to make that decision, to decide to pinch hit for Alex Rodriguez, the great Alex Rodriguez, to pinch hit for the great Alex Rodriguez. You don't do that. That's something that's rarely – your number three man in the lineup, Alex Rodriguez. That guy, $30 million Alex Rodriguez. That guy, that Alex Rodriguez. It's unbelievable. 647 home run, Alex Rodriguez. You pinch hit for him. And it turns out well. All ends well for you. You look like a freaking genius, Joe Girardi. You look like a genius. You look like a genius, Joe Girardi. For that move, you look like a genius. And then the Yankees come back and they bench A-Rod yesterday. Bench him. Benches a $30 million A-Rod. Benches him. And it is hard not to bench a guy who's been 2-for-16 in these playoffs. With a batting average of 125 in these playoffs, including 9 strikeouts in these playoffs. No doubles, no triples. No home runs in these playoffs. 2 singles. You don't give a guy $30 million to do that. You don't expect out of a guy who has hit 647 home runs, some which we now know has been aided by little help, little enhancement over the years. But this is shocking. Alex Rodriguez, you wonder what happens moving forward with Alex Rodriguez. We wonder. We shall see, but these baseball playoffs have been very, very exciting. And let's go to another sport, which has always been exciting, the great sport of football. And again, a full slate of NFL games. We saw Thursday night, with Tennessee and the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Steelers lose to the Titans in Tennessee. The Steelers now having their troubles on the road, 0-3 on the road right now, a team that is struggling on the road. But we're going to talk about some more football and a whole lot of football with our guest, 11-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Famer, the one, the only, Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
Good. How you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. And, Willie, I want to start in New Orleans, a place you know all, know and love. Drew Brees breaks the record, 48 touchdowns in consecutive games, held by Johnny Unitas for a very, very long time. A very, very long time, and Drew Brees finally breaks it. Now, I look at it this way, 48 games. If you could play 48 games in the NFL, that's impressive, as far as I'm concerned. But some could argue with the rule changes and everything that the record is not as impressive as it could have been. How do you feel about this record?
You know, I think it's a great feat regardless. You know, I obviously, you know, the rule changes helped him in the way they score, but it doesn't matter. You got to stay healthy 48 games in a row. You got to be on the field 48 games in a row, and you got to throw a touchdown pass 48 in a row. So it's an awesome record. I don't think maybe it was a little tougher for Johnny Unitas to do it, but you know, I just remember playing in Baltimore in 1999, and I was me and McCray were battling, and that was Dick's last year, and he even Ogden brought it up, and I remember seeing Johnny U on the sideline, and you know, it just fired me up, and I got after McCray pretty good that game, because Ogden and I were talking about it at one of those golf tournaments, at Joe Namath golf tournament a little while back about that game, and I said, man, I was looking, I saw Johnny Unitas on the skyline. I had to go out there before, but it, you know, he was just a special, you know, person, and if he was in standing on the skyline watching the game, you were going to take notice, because that's the kind of impact that Johnny Unitas had on football.
And Drew Brees, again, he breaks the record 48 games, but Tom Brady is lurking, 37 straight games with a touchdown, and the possibility that Tom Brady could equal Unitas' mark, if not break it, by the end of the year. It's a possibility. We shall see. But, to your point, I mean, to play 48 games in the NFL, not only to play the 48 games, but to get out there and score at least, or throw, I should say, at least one touchdown. The last touchdown that he did not throw, the last game, I should say, that he went through without throwing a touchdown, happened back in 2009, Week 4 against the New York Jets. That's a long time. That's a long time.
Very long. Very long time.
And, Willie, another one of your former teams, the Kansas City Chiefs, you know that fan base very well. Last week, that fan base cheered for Matt Castle, who has been struggling, playing some bad football right now, but when he was laying on the ground, had a concussion. What are your thoughts when you see fans cheering, especially the Kansas City fans that you know very well, cheering a guy on the ground injured?
You know, I just think it's a sign of frustration. I mean, let's be realistic. The Chiefs team haven't been a real, you know, since I left in 2005, we went 10-6, didn't make the playoffs. Should have made the playoffs, but, you know, the AFC was very tough then. But since I left in 2005, the next year they made the playoffs, with 9-7. With Herm Edwards, they haven't put a consistent product on the field. You know, if you don't put a consistent product on the field, the fans aren't going to be happy. And the fans have not been happy with the roller coaster ride of them showing up one week and not playing the next week, and they're showing up halfway playing. I mean, you've been watching them, Paul. I've been watching them, Paul, just like the Raiders. They're just not a consistent come-to-work-every-week football team. And it frustrates the fans because, they, you know, you expect that from an NFL team. And especially as good as we were when I played at home, you weren't going to come to Arrowhead and just get a win. We didn't lose that much there. It was just too tough to come in there and play us. So, like I said, I don't know the numbers, Paul, of the winning and losing since the last 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 6 years at home, but I wanted to say it hadn't been too good.
At Arrowhead, you're saying?
Yes.
Let me check that, but we'll move on for that, but we'll get back to that. But you look at this Chiefs team. I mean, you're saying more. You're saying it's just a byproduct of, yes, the fans are cheering him being hurt, but it's more of a byproduct of just frustration in general from this team, from the fans, I should say, about this team over the years.
Exactly, it's the frustration of the players. You know, getting their hopes up, thinking they're going to have some guys they're going to come out playing. They're not playing consistently. So that's what I would say.
Right.
I say it's a frustration of the product that's been out there for a whole over the last 5, 6 years. Yes.
And it hasn't been a great product in Kansas City, and this team has really struggled over the years. And, I mean, you bring in Matt Castle, and he was a guy that was supposed to be the quarter. I mean, he did lead them to the playoffs that one year. I thought they got very fortunate that particular year. It was 2 years ago they got to the playoffs. But he's not a starting NFL quarterback in this league, I don't think.
Yeah, Matt Castle, you know, he had a great system in that one year when Brady got hurt. But he did a real good job. And, you know, he got awarded a contract. I mean, remember the Patriots kept him, and they finally traded him. So, you know, he took advantage of the situation. But, you know, I don't know. He's had different coordinators. You know, he's picked up different systems. It's not the same system he ran in Patriots. And, obviously, if you look at the Patriots now, and you see, you got Scott Pioli, who's the general manager for the Chiefs, who, you know, if you look at it, if you want to question where the losses for the last couple of years, you can evaluate the job he's done. You've got Cornell, who left and trying to be a head coach, is trying to be a head coach again. He's with Cleveland. You have Charlie Weiss, who's left. You had the other coach, Josh McDaniels, who left, who's back, but with Belichick again. And, you know, if you look at it, the key to the card is Belichick and everything. Belichick and Tom Brady, and, you know, sometimes the defense hasn't been as good, but they keep that thing rolling in New England. They lost two or three starting offensive linemen this year. And I didn't think they would be able to protect Tom Brady this year when they lost Brian Waters and Logan's has been in and out the lineup, and then Matt Lynch retires. And they're still putting up numbers offensively and being productive. They're running the football and keeping teams off the field. They're still doing it. So, obviously, Belichick has been to the key to their system, and Belichick is one of the best coaches they ever coached in that league. Because look at the production he's done, and look when he loses all those coaches and some players, how they keep it all rolling. I mean, it's incredible for me to see them lose some of the players they lost going on a Super Bowl team last year, and the production they're still putting up. I would have never guessed it.
And the Patriots keep on moving. So, like you said, it's a well-oiled machine there. I mean, it's just a flat-out well-oiled machine. No matter what happens, no matter what goes on, no matter what they go up against, they always are successful and find a way to be successful, and that is that ball club in New England. Let's look at the Chiefs, the home record over the past few years. 2010, the year they went to the playoffs with Matt Castle, they were 7-1 at Arrowhead. That's 2010.
Okay.
We go 2011, you look at this ball club at home. This Chiefs team struggled at home, 3-5 at home. So that wasn't too good in 2011. And obviously what we see now in 2012.
7-8, 9.
2012, you look at this team, 0-3 at home right now. So it's not a good situation for the Chiefs at Arrowhead, and not a good situation with Matt Castle as their starting quarterback. And also, Willie, another team that some could question the quarterback play. I mean, I'm not, but there's people who are questioning the quarterback play, and that's in Philadelphia. Michael Vick, earlier in the year, he had issues with interceptions. He seemed to correct that. Now he's having issues with the fumbling. He had issues with this throughout the course of his career. He led the league in fumbles in 2004, led the league in fumbles in 2010, and at this point, he has 8 fumbles in 5 weeks. Does he correct this issue, Willie?
Well, it rained last week in Pittsburgh.
What's that? It was raining, not the whole game. Wasn't raining the whole game. When he had that fumble in the first quarter, it wasn't raining.
So that one fumble, the fumble that he did when they were going in to score a touchdown, that's the change in the game right there. You can't fumble your own red zone, Paul.
You can't. Definitely.
I don't know what you want me to say. I mean, Dick has not been playing. We talk about Drew Brees making the record. And, yes, Drew Brees is a gunslinger. He's going to give you some picks because it depends on him so much. And he's thrown too many pick sixes back this year. And they caught the one that could have caused the Saints when the guy hit him. They called the penalty when he threw the one against San Diego. They could have really hurt him last week to get called back. But you can't turn the ball over consistently at quarterback, and you can't fumble the ball. It seems like Michael Vick is not one thing, it's something else. But whatever it was, they finally caught up with him last week because that was a beatable game, a winnable game in Pittsburgh. The defense played pretty good. Pittsburgh's struggling. The offensive line, I mean, they better start drafting linemen in the first round this year for the next 2 years because they need a whole new offensive line.
And yeah, Pittsburgh, I mean, Big Ben definitely takes a beating in Pittsburgh, but he's a big guy and a big boy, and he finds a way to keep it going. I will say this about Michael Vick, and here's what the stats are telling me, Willie, that I believe possibly he can correct this. 2011, when he had issues, he had some issues with fumbles. He lost 7 fumbles in the first 3 games, but only fumbled 3 more times moving forward the past 10 games, over the 10 games in 2011. In 2010, he had his fumbling issues in November and December, but after that, he only fumbled 4 times in the final 9 games. So, I mean, there's hope. That tells you that there's hope for Michael Vick. Again, he had the fumbling issues in 2011, 7 fumbles in 3 games.
Last year when Michael Vick had to sit down for a few weeks, if you remember, when they lost the chance to get in the playoffs, the last month of the season, he played great. I mean, when the team started rolling again, they started winning, they were playing good. Now, some of that is the end of the season. You kind of out of it, and you play just going out there playing. But, the pressure's on. He has to play a lot more consistent. He has to. If that team's going to win, you can't turn the ball over. The Eagles are going to win. But another thing, the stat that my cousin Gil said, McCoy needs to touch the ball at least 20, 25 times a game. Pass or run, and take the pressure off Vic, but they got to turn the ball over. But McCoy needs to get at least 25 touches a game to keep them off balance and run that football and to control that clock and let Michael do what he needs to do. But I think more than Vic is going to be McCoy is going to have to get the touches.
And I would agree with you. LeSean McCoy, I think he's the best running back in football. I mean, he can do it all, out of the backfield, running the football. To me, he is the best back in football. He is the closest to Barry Sanders that we have ever seen, I think, in the last few years. I mean, his ability to go in and out of holes, he's so shifty. I mean, I think he is the best back in football. And to your point, I think since I do believe he is the best back in football, the best back in football needs to touch the ball at least 20 to 25 times. I mean, I think that's a great, great point. And we're talking to Hall of Famer Willie Rofe. And Willie, in Washington, you have RG3 playing some good football in Washington, but he went out last week, had a concussion. And this is a guy kind of like Michael Vick, a guy who takes big hits. He seems to not want to slide. Do you believe he'll correct this issue, or is this something that's just in him? And something that just comes naturally to him.
He was trying to get out of bounds, and wasn't the weather kind of bad up there too?
Was it what, in terms of the weather?
Yeah, wasn't the weather kind of bad in Washington?
I believe it was some rain there. But
But you got to get out of balance. You got to start sliding feet first. You got to start doing the things where they can't make contact with you like that. He was going into the slide, and the guy hit him going down. And, you know, he didn't hit him hand-to-hand shot. So RG3 got up and was moving around. Obviously, they said, you know, he hadn't had any, you know, stuff following the, you know, the concussion. You know, it didn't look as bad as some of the ones we've seen. But for a rookie, he's taking a lot of hits, and he's got to learn how to take care of that body. If he wants to play in this league for 10 years, 12 years, he's going to change his style of play and figure out that, you know, that Baylor no more, you in the NFL. And I remember a couple weeks ago, he complained when he went to St. Louis or somewhere, they were playing dirty. When you complain that he's playing dirty, well, I think the next week he played Cincinnati. So I know he took some shots in Cincinnati because that defense will hit you. So he's going to have to understand he's in the pros, and you can't you can complain all you want, but they still going to keep hitting you. And this year, I know that the commissioner's trying to do a better job of managing the players and stuff like that. But you've had a lot of concussions this year early, and it's been a lot of big hits, especially week four. They were doing some hitting out there on that football field.
They sure were, and RG3 is going to have to – I mean, and like a Vic, he's not a big guy. He's not a very big guy, so he's going to learn. He's going to have to learn how to slide and learn to play for the next play.
And that's what they say, the difference between him and Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck, he is a big guy. He stands up big, and he doesn't take off one, and he has good pocket presence. But some of that, too, is the play calls with Shanahan, the rollouts, the bootlegs that he likes to do that he did in Denver. You know, the play calling is going to lead RG3 to getting hit some, you know, getting those extra hits. But, you know, hopefully he learns how to avoid him and get rid of the football when he needs to get rid of the football or get out of bounds earlier. So he doesn't take as many hits in the future.
Definitely. And Willie, the Green Bay Packers now, a team that is 2-3, a team that fell victim to Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts, a team that was up in that ball game a lot. They were in control of that ball game, and they let it go at the end. Right now, the offense is not putting up the numbers that it once did years ago. Right now, you have the Bears, who are 4-1. You have the Vikings, who are 4-1, excuse me. And now you have the Packers. This team is traveling to play the 5-0 Houston Texans Sunday night football. So it's a possibility this team could be 2-4 after this week. Do the Packers turn this thing around, Willie?
Not with their division as good as it is now. They don't turn it around. The Vikings have gotten a lot better, like you said. The Bears have gotten a lot better. I think the division is tough. I think maybe they become an 8-8 ball club, but I don't see the way those other teams are playing. You know, they already started playing in Minnesota, and Minnesota is very good. And Chicago is very good. I just think, it looks to me, it just looks like to me that, you know, they scored a lot of points, but they gave up a whole lot last year. This year they're not scoring as much. You know, they're not scoring as much. And they lose such a vision who was running the ball. So, you know, what are they going to start throwing the ball even more game? I mean, that line's going to have to do a good job protecting, and you're not going to be able to throw the ball the whole game. So them losing Cedric Benson on top of they're giving up some points, too. You know, they're still getting older in the secondary. Well, you know, you got Charles Wilson. But, you mean they're good, but I just don't see them turning around. And what's the one that Stanley is complaining about, him and Aaron Rodgers' chemistry or – I don't know what's going on over there.
And you look at – I can't put this team away just yet because I don't believe in Minnesota just completely. Christian Ponder has played decently, but he's the numbers aren't eye-popping. I mean, they are getting it done on the defensive side of football. But I'm not one to believe just yet about Minnesota. And I think Green Bay can come back. I'm not sure they'll win this week against the Houston Texans. But I'm looking at the next 3 weeks. After they play the Houston Texans, they travel to St. Louis, which is very winnable, and then you have two home games against Jacksonville and Arizona. So the next
St. Louis?
St. Louis, that's a winnable game.
St. Louis is playing pretty damn good.
They are, but I think it's a winnable game for Green Bay in St. Louis. No matter where they're playing, I think it's a winnable game. If they can find a way to win this game, the next three are very, very winnable, and they could be easily after 9 weeks 6-3.
I'm not gonna say the St. Louis game is winnable. You know how good St. Louis is playing at home right now.
They're playing very well.
You better think they beat Arizona 17-3. They're playing excellent. And you talk about a defense. St. Louis got a defense too.
They got a defense. Their defense plays well, especially at home. But the thing I'm looking
at
is this is still a Green Bay team with Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback. You still have Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
As long as you have Aaron Rodgers, you have a shot.
How many points does that defense give it up?
What's that?
They've been giving up defensively, though. They're giving up a lot, too, man.
They're giving up 22 points a game on the defensive side of football. That's a lot of points. That's a lot of points. I mean, there's no getting around that. Definitely is a lot of points. But I think with Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback, I can't discount this team. I don't think they'll beat Houston this week, but I can't say completely that they can't beat Houston. I can't say the Texans are unbeatable, but I will say this.
No, I can't say that either. I can't say that either because the Texans, well, we'll talk about this when we get to my top five, but I don't have Texans number one because of, one because of Brian Cushing and another because of the production of a certain player. But I will say this, that Green Bay is going to have to play a lot better and going to tighten everything up. How can Green Bay win all those games without a running game? Who's going to be this is out for the year? So
You're right.
They got to run the ball. I don't care who you are. Eventually, you got to run the ball. And what do the Patriots do? The Patriots start running their football, and Denver cannot stop them, and they wear the defense out. When you pound the ball and run the ball on teams, you mentally destroy the defense. You keep passing the ball, they're going to think they're going to get some turnovers. But when you start running that rock on the teams and they ain't seen it, and they're not even ready for it this year like they used to be, it wears the team out. They're not used to running down and keep running. It's over. It's going to be over. And they wore Denver out last week running that football.
They did. They really pounded Denver out in that particular game. And Tom Brady's had a lot of success against that Denver defense over the past couple of years. You look back at the game in Denver in the regular season, then the playoff game where, I mean, they could have just scored. They scored at will against the Bronco defense, and even last week they were very successful against the Bronco defense. And, Willie, let's get to your top five now. And as you gave us a preview, you said the Texans are not number one. I don't know who could be number one if the Texans are not, but – go ahead. So give me your top five.
Well, you know, obviously, because Atlanta's healthy, and because, even with the injury to Grimes, they've done such a good job of being consistent. So, you know, I have Atlanta number one.
Okay.
I have a 4-1 team number two because you have a lot of good 4-1 teams. A couple of them that aren't as good as this one. So I got the 49ers at number two because they've been playing excellent. At number three, you have the Houston. I have Houston at number three, partially because of the fact that Houston lost Brian Cushing for the year.
That's
and if you look at the production of Andre Johnson over the last few years, I mean, compared this year to the year when he had the huge year, his numbers are way down. He's got 17 catches, 2 touchdowns through the first 5 weeks. You know, I think maybe some of those hamstring injuries and stuff have caught up with him. I don't know this, but his production has to go up for them to be better. He's their go-to player, and Foster's playing great. The running game, you know, is great with them. But I have them sliding into number three by losing Cushing's, and we'll see how that continues to play out. But the production of Andre Johnson has got to improve. At number four, I have the New England Patriots. You know, Tom Brady and Belichick and those guys just keep it rolling. And, you know, I'm very, very impressed with the Belichick, with this team. Belichick has put on the field offensively, defensively, the way they run the football. I really like that, the old school mentality of putting the team away when you have them now. And at the number five team this week, I have, even though they had a tough loss last week at St. Louis, I still have the Cardinals at number five.
The Arizona Cardinals, who have Kevin Cobb as their quarterback, the Arizona Cardinals, who lost 17-3 against the St. Louis Rams. This Arizona Cardinal team, an Arizona Cardinal team that has not been good on the offensive side of football. Defense has been good, but in terms of the offensive side of football, it has not been good. I can't have the Cardinals there. The Cardinals,
you're right. Let me think about that. You know, if you want to say it, that you're right, then I would have to put the Bears at number five.
I can live with that. I can live with the Bears. I can live with the Bears at number five. I can definitely live with the Bears at five. The Cardinals, yes, they cannot be there.
No, you're
they
right.
Cannot
be there. I agree with you. The Cardinals, you know, they go. But the Texans have done this before. They started off good, and then the year goes on, they just don't play as well. And like I said, the production of Andre Johnson has to go up. They lost Brian Cushions. So it's going to, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But the production of Andre Johnson is going to have to improve. And you're right. I'll put the Bears at five. But
I can live with the Bears at five. I can live with the Bears.
Atlanta's early. I mean, the 49ers made it to the NFC Championship game last year. Atlanta is another team that we don't know what Atlanta's going to be late in the season. You know,
they're
starting 5-0, but we don't know what they're going to be late in the season.
I mean, Atlanta, we've seen this before. We've seen this script before. We haven't seen 5-0 before in a while, but we've seen this script before in terms of them being successful in the regular season. You remember 2 years ago when they had the best record in the NFC and they lost to the Packers, and then even last year against the Giants when they went to the Meadowlands, they didn't even score an offensive touchdown and lost 24-2. So we've seen this before from Atlanta, the success in the regular season, the team that many jump on that bandwagon. People jumped on that bandwagon hard last year, and I know people are jumping right now, but we shall see what happens with the Atlanta Falcons moving forward. And Willie, we shall see what happens this week in the National Football League. A lot of great football games, and we shall see. Pleasure having you, man. Let's do it again.
Thank you for having me. And I don't know what New York's going to do with A-Rod, but he's got to pick it up. But the much money, we're going to 5 years, $114
million. $30 million this year. $30 million this year. 647 home runs for his career. You got to give me more.
Well, if I'm the owner, I'm gonna have to give him something to get him going again. I'm gonna get some production out of him.
Maybe he needs the juice again. Never mind. We shall see.
Maybe he needs a cousin and whoever found him on the road just like they used to do. All right,
all right, Willie. Hall of Famer Willie Rofe. 11-time Pro Bowler Willie Rofe. A-Rod needs something. A-Rod needs something to give back to the old A-Rod that we all know and love. I mean, this guy is he's struggling. He's struggling right now. He really is struggling right now. And I don't know. I mean, Joe Girardi, give him credit. He had the stones to sit down Alex Rodriguez. To pinch hit for Alex Rodriguez with his team down 2-1 in the ninth inning. That's big. And some superstars you would have lost there. And a lot of, I heard Michael Kay talk about this a few days ago. He's talking about when Joe Torre dropped A-Rod in the lineup, dropped him to eighth in the lineup a few years back. And at that point, Michael Kay felt and said that A-Rod, Joe Torre had lost A-Rod from that point on. He lost him from that point on. But it seems like at this point, A-Rod is taking this in stride. And I guess the reality is when your replacement, Raul Urbanez, with the guy who pinched it for you in that particular game, when he hits two home runs in the ninth and the 12th inning, you really can't say anything but cheer, laugh, and celebrate. I mean, that's really all you can say. That's really all you can do. I mean, that's really all you can do in that particular situation. I mean, the guy did what he was called on to do, meaning Raul Banez. He did what he was called on to do, got off the bench, and hit a home run not only in the ninth, but in the 12th inning to put the game away, to win the ball game. That's clutch hitting. That's clutch hitting. And he had an RBI single last night. That's clutch hitting by Raul Banez. That's just flat-out clutch hitting. And give him a lot of credit. Give the Yankees a lot of credit because they moved on to the ALCS. Give Sabathia a lot of credit for his performance last night. He was a horse last night for the Yankees. Give him credit. And now give Joe Girardi a whole lot of credit for going with Raul Banez and having the heart, the stones, to go with Banez in that particular spot. Tough spot. Tough, tough spot. Tough spot to go with Banez there if you're Joe Torre. Not Joe Torre, Joe Girardi. You get those Joe, too many Joes. But a tough spot by Girardi. Saw A-Rod has been struggling. A-Rod, we all know his numbers. Batting a paltry 125 in these playoffs. We've seen what he has done. It has been nothing in these playoffs to this point. Has not been nothing. He's done nothing. And he felt like he needed to make a move, and he made the move. He made the move, and he went to Raul Banez, and Raul Banez saved the day. Saved the day. Saved the day for the Yankees, and ultimately the Yankees will move on and beat the Baltimore Orioles. Tough time in the Beltway. Tough time in the Beltway. A tough, tough time in the Beltway. Tough time in the D.C. area. Tough time to be a fan of the Orioles and the Nationals. It's time now to switch and focus on your Ravens and on your Redskins because baseball has ended in the Beltway. I mean, who knows? Maybe it could have been all Beltway World Series. Could have had a Beltway World Series. That's not happening. That's not happening. Baseball was buzzing in the Beltway. And it could be buzzing for years to come. That's not going to happen this year. That's the Yankees and the Cardinals. Move on, the Yankees. Get a big outing out of C.C. Sabathia. Complete game. And then the Cardinals do the improbable and beat up on the Washington Nationals late in that ball game to get the victory. And we talked about Michael Vick and his fumbles and everything. And as I said, in 2011, last year, he fumbled 7 times in the first 3 games, but only fumbled 3 times, I should say, in 10 games the rest of the year. So that's last year. So history tells us he can correct it. He can correct this. He can correct this. He can correct this. Fumbled 7 times in 3 games between November and December. And only fumbled 4 times the other 9 games. That was in 2010. So history tells us, yes, he's had some issues with fumbling. Yes, he led the league in fumbling in 2004 and 2010. But it seems like he has his moments. He has a few games where he just fumbles throughout the course of his career, and then he just turns it around. He fixes it. So maybe he just has those moments where he just gets a little lax in terms of ball security, and then from there, stuff just happens, and he just corrects it. So he has the lapses with ball security for a month or two, and then he seems to fix it. He's had some issues with ball security, 8 fumbles in 5 games to this point. But history has told us and shown us that Michael Vick has fixed the problem in terms of fumbling. He has fixed the problem. Let me read it to you again. Just so you're clear, he fumbled 7 times the first 3 games in 2011, but only fumbled 3 more times the final 10 games. Only fumbled 3 more times the final 10 games. 3 more times the final 10 games. So that shows you and that tells you that Michael Vick can correct it. He can correct this. He corrected the issues with the interceptions to this point. And he's corrected this situation. I mean, he can correct it. History has shown us that he can correct it. Will he correct it? I think he does. I think he will correct it. But we shall see. We shall see. And there are also some issues, concerning Michael Vick, not issues per se, but there was a tweet that he tweeted out, a picture. You saw the picture. I believe it was him and his daughter in the picture, but you also saw a picture of milk bones, dog bones pretty much, and then Michael Vick did finally confirm that he does own a dog. He does own a dog again. He does have a dog in the house. And as far as I'm concerned, I mean, it's really not an issue. I mean, you could argue, yes, a guy who's had some issues with dogs in terms of fighting dogs, and we all know the story. We all know the story. But he is a dog owner again. He has kids. And, you know, I mean, I think looking at the situation, I think it's a good idea for him to have a dog. And I look at a statement that he put out, and it makes me even more so sure that it's probably a good idea. Let me read his statement. Excuse me. I understand the strong emotions by some people about our family's decision to care for a pet. As a father, it is important to make sure my children develop a healthy relationship with animals. I want to ensure that my children establish a loving bond and treat all of God's creatures with kindness and respect. Our pet is well cared for and loved as a member of our family. And to me, I mean, the culture, and I've heard a lot of people say this in that Virginia area, the Newport News area, that area of the country, that dog fighting is very prevalent in that area. So with this, by him, as far as I'm concerned, I know he had a probation for a period where he couldn't own a dog, I should say. And so I look at it and I say, by reading his statement, that statement says, you know what? It's probably a good idea. It's probably a good idea to have your kids have a healthy relationship and a healthy respect for animals. That's probably a good idea. And when I see that, I say to myself, yeah, it's probably a good idea. Probably a good idea that his kids own a dog, and his family as a whole own a dog. I mean, it's probably a good idea. Probably not a bad idea. For that to happen, for Michael Vick to own a dog. Probably not a bad idea. And, I mean, I've heard some crazy arguments in terms of this whole thing. You know, I heard the argument that some believe, you know, it's a little similar to a pedophile working or being around kids again and things of that nature. But, I mean, let's be real. This is a dog. This is a dog. But let's not make those crazy comparisons. This is a dog we're talking about, not a child. This is a dog. But also, I mean, I think there was obviously he grew up in a culture that viewed dogs in a different way and doesn't make it right, doesn't give him a pass for his actions. But I think what it does do is this. It shows that, okay, he had the history of it. He grew up in a situation where dogs weren't respected maybe the way they should have been. So to me, by having a dog now and having your kids and yourself and everybody care for the dog, to me, now you teach your kids to have a healthy respect for animals. And that's not a bad thing. That's just not a bad thing. That's a good thing. That's a good thing with this, with that. And so, yeah, I'm just happy Michael Vick has seemingly turned his life around, and I'm happy that he's taking advantage of the opportunity he's gotten again. I mean, most people don't get another chance to make a lot of money. I mean, the guy signed two $100 million contracts in his career. And so people don't get opportunities to do that in life. You don't get an opportunity. Usually if you blow once, sometimes that opportunity doesn't come back around again. But I think being in America, you know, we're a land of forgiveness, and it's time to forgive. I mean, people still have their issues and feelings about it. You still see it that, you know, how can Michael Vick own a dog after all the things he's done with dogs? I mean, how is that possible? Well, why would he do it? So on and so forth. But the reality is this. life is life, and we all make mistakes. And again, he viewed animals differently than what most people do. Doesn't make it right, but it definitely doesn't make it right. But I also believe it's this, that reading his statement tells me that, you know what, this is a great idea. This is a great idea. And I have my doubts. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. Maybe it's just not a good idea for him to own a dog at this point because of the perceptions that may be out there. Because of some of the perceptions that may be out there. And if anything were to happen to the animal in his care, God forbid if anything would happen to the animal in his care, he probably would not get the benefit of the doubt. So from that standpoint, I was thinking to myself, maybe it's not a good idea. But after reading his statement, that he put out there concerning this incident, this issue, it's not an issue, but concerning this situation, after reading his statement, I'm thinking to myself that it probably is a good idea. Again, the part of the statement that I'm talking about, and I quote him, "I want to ensure that my children establish a loving bond and treat all of God's creatures with kindness and respect." So that part of the statement tells me, okay, this is not a bad idea. This is a great idea. I have my doubts. But I think it's great. And I'm happy that his kids only have a dog, and I'm happy he has a dog. And I hope, again, that his kids and himself can both develop and have positive interactions with animals. And I believe he will. How about that? I believe he will. So, I mean, it's, you know, you've had to talk about it, you've heard to talk about it, but I'm just, it's good to see him again, turning himself around, and getting himself right, getting himself ready to go, and doing the things necessary to become a better person, a better citizen in this world, doing the things to become a better citizen. And that's good. That's a great thing. We never can have too many good citizens. And Michael Vick, again, is seemingly turning his situation around. I'm happy for him. Happy to see that his kids and himself are having positive relationship with animals. I'm happy. But as an Eagles fan, I want to see him continue to progress on the field. He corrected the interceptions. History has told me that he can correct the fumbles. That's what history tells me. History tells me that he goes through moments and times where he fumbles. And then he turns it around. And he has turned it over the years. He's turned it around. I believe he can turn this one around. And I think he will turn it around. I had Eagles going to the Super Bowl, so I have to believe he's going to turn it around. And I think he will. And hopefully when he turns it around. You look at the Eagles, I mean, last week, I mean, yes, we can come down hard on Michael Vick for the turnovers and everything. That's not acceptable. Obviously, it's not acceptable to turn the football over at an alarming rate. But I will say this. Late in that football game and late in the football game throughout this season, you look at Cleveland, 4 interceptions, chips were down. He took his team 91 yards. They score a touchdown. They win the game. Baltimore, team's down. He had a couple of interceptions in that game. He took his team 80 yards. They win the game. The Giants, his team is down, had no turnovers in that game. He took his team down the field. They kicked the field goal. Ultimately, they will hold on and win the game. Against the Pittsburgh Steelers, team down 13-7. He's had the fumbles, had the big fumble in the end zone. Big fumble. At least you want to get 3 points there. Had the big fumble. That's a big fumble. There's no getting around that. Had a big fumble there. Guess what? When the chips were down in the fourth quarter, his team was 6 minutes and 30-some-odd seconds to go. We're up 14-3. So say what you want. in terms of the fumbles, in terms of the turnovers, but in the fourth quarter, Michael Vick has been magical, and the Eagles are 3-2, and they have the Lions at home this week. We'll see if they can continue their winning ways, me and the Eagles. Well, they are 3-2, but they're about to go into the bye. If they can win this game, they'll be 4-2. And, oh, by the way, at this point, they are still in first place in the NFC East. The second hour of Go For It starts right now. Second hour of Go For It. Coming up and coming at you. Expected to be joined by Cliff Floyd, former MLB star. We're going to talk to Cliff about the 30 for 30 movie Broke that he was in and talked about athletes and finances. Also, we're going to talk to Cliff about what we saw last night in the MLB playoffs and what we've seen over the past few weeks in these playoffs, which have been absolutely, positively exciting. Off the charts. Off the charts. Off the charts these past few weeks. And then last night was some great baseball. Last few nights, we've seen some great, great baseball. Seen some great baseball over the past few nights. And it's been very, very exciting to watch. But I didn't watch last night to watch the Nationals and the St. Louis Cardinals because I thought it was done. I thought the game was over. I didn't make the investment to stay up. I decided, you know what, let me get some precious sleep. Let's get some valuable sleep at this point. Let's get the valuable sleep that we all desire, we all covet. And that was my mindset at that point. Get the sleep necessary. Get some sleep. That was my mindset last night. But I missed out on some exciting, some exhilarating baseball. I mean, I really missed out on some good baseball. Missed out on some good baseball. But it is what it is. Life is life. What can you do? You move on. And I want to go back to the NFL now. And interesting stat line that I saw the other day concerning the Jets' Mark Sanchez. A very, very interesting stat line. A scary stat line, if you ask me. A very scary stat line, if you ask me. A stat line that makes me a little nervous even saying it. I mean, I guess numbers never lie, so they say. But, I mean, just a scary, scary numbers is concerning Mark Sanchez. We all know Mark Sanchez wears the number 6. We all know that is his number. But we also know, here are some other interesting sixes concerning Mark Sanchez, and it makes me a little nervous even saying them. Mark Sanchez, this year, 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He wears the number 6. His longest completion was 66 yards. He has an average of 6.56 yards per pass. And his quarterback rating is 66.6. That's a lot of sixes. And we all know what 666 is all about. His stat line is scary. It's scary to say the least, and you look at a stat line. Well, first of all, if your quarterback rating is 66, you're not doing too well. Secondly, if you have 6 touchdowns and 6 interceptions at this point, you're not doing very well. You're not doing very well. It's scary. And guess what? Guess what game Mark Sanchez played in on Monday? He played in the 666 Monday Night Football game. He played in a 666 Monday Night Football game. So not only does he have six touchdowns and six interceptions, not only is his quarterback rating 66.6, but he managed to play in a 666 Monday Night Football game. That's scary. That's some scary, scary numbers there. And obviously, I don't think it would have been that big of a deal, but I guess what makes it such a big deal is who his backup quarterback is. Tim Tebow. And we all know what Tim Tebow's about. We all know what Tim Tebow's about. Tim Tebow is his backup. Tim Tebow is his backup. So all these sixes are thrown around, and Tim Tebow is his backup quarterback. Wow. Wow. I mean, that's all you can say is wow. That's all you can say is wow when it comes to those numbers. Maybe it's time for a quarterback change. I mean, just to change things around. Maybe you could change it, just to change the mojo, if you will, change some things around. Maybe you can, I don't know, maybe it's time to go to Tim Tebow or something. I mean, just those numbers are ominous, I mean, to say the least. And they always say numbers never lie. They always say numbers never lie. 66.6 quarterback rating. Numbers tell me that you're not playing good football. That's what those numbers tell me. That's what those numbers tell me. You're not playing good football. 66.6 QB rating. Six touchdowns, six interceptions. I'm going to stop saying it because it's making me scared. I'm going to stop saying those numbers. I will not mention those numbers again, but I will mention this. Mark Sanchez is not getting it done this year. Has not been getting it done throughout the course of the year for the New York Jets. He's had some struggles, big-time struggles. And the Jets now are 2-3. And this is a team that I don't think will make the playoffs. A team that I thought in the beginning of the year would not make the playoffs. So what I'm seeing here, I'm not surprised. This is what you get with Mark Sanchez. And they gave him that extension in the offseason, but this is what you get with this guy. This is what you will continue to get from Mark Sanchez. He is who he is. He is who he is. He's a game manager. He's not a game changer. He's not changing anything for you in terms of the game. He's managing your game. He's not going to win you a game. You're not going to win a game because of Mark Sanchez. You're going to win a game because of ground and pound of your defense. That's how you're going to win football games. That's how you're going to win football games. But what we have seen from Mark Sanchez has not been good. And when you have that QB rating, you have those touchdowns, those interceptions, and you just have that. And I'm not saying Tim Tebow is the answer. I'm saying he's far from the answer. But what I'm saying is, and the Jets team and to Mark Sanchez, in fairness to Mark Sanchez, his best wide receivers, Santonio Holmes, probably the best player on the offensive side of football. He's gone for the year. Dustin Keller's been gone for a period of time. They're not getting the production out of the run game that they've gotten in years past. And it's all catching up to this ball club, a team that, I mean, they've played some two tough teams the past 2 weeks. San Francisco, who Willie has, is the second-best team in football, and then the Houston Texans, who many believe is the best team in football. So they run into some serious competition over the past 2 weeks. They've run into some serious competition. So there's no getting around that. They really have run into some serious competition over the last few weeks. But, I mean, if you're a Super Bowl team and you're about getting to the Super Bowl and doing big things, as Rex Ryan wants to talk about each and every year with his New York Jets, then you got to beat those teams. You got to beat the Houston Texans. you've got to beat the San Francisco 49ers. Both of those games were at home. I mean, the Jets may catch a break this week playing the Indianapolis Colts, coming off a very emotional victory against the Green Bay Packers. But Andrew Luck is good. Been very good throughout the course of this year. Been very good. We shall see. You're listening to Go For It on Block Talk Radio. And we're back. We are back. And if you're a Jets fan, hopefully it'll get better for you. I doubt it. I doubt that it gets much better for you. Jets have been struggling. And I don't see anything in sight that'll change that about this Jets team. I really don't. I really don't see anything in sight that'll change anything about this Jets team. I really don't. But we'll see. We shall see. And just looking around the National Football League, and big game in San Francisco with the Giants and the 49ers, a rematch of the NFC title game a year ago. That was a good football game, by the way. And you know that 49er team is smart off of that loss. You know they're not too happy about that loss. And that was a game they should have won. That was a game they had. They were in control. That was a game they should have won. And I'm surprised that they didn't. I'm surprised that they didn't win that game. And they have Kyle Williams to thank for that. I mean, the two fumbles on the punts were big. Were huge. Were absolutely huge. Turned that whole football game around. 49ers were, I think, were going to win that game. There was no way I thought the Giants were going to go a full field to beat this ball club. And they didn't. They had a small field to go, and they took advantage of that small field. And ultimately won that game, that short field, I should say. But the New York Giants now, going to San Francisco and going to a place where they're going to face a quarterback who is the number one rated quarterback in football, and Alex Smith. Yes, I said it. Believe it or not, Alex Smith is the number one rated quarterback in football. Alex Smith, the number one rated quarterback in the National Football League is Alex Smith. Not Tom Brady, not Aaron Rodgers, Alex Smith is the number one rated quarterback in football. 8 touchdowns, only 1 interception. He's taking care of the football, And this 49ers football team, with the defense that they have, with the running game that they have, and with Alex Smith taking care of the football, they're going to be a tough team to beat. The one thing you can say about the 49ers, they don't beat themselves. You have to beat this team. And they beat themselves against the Giants last year with the 2 Kyle Williams fumbles. This team doesn't beat itself. They don't beat themselves. They don't do it. They don't beat themselves. And Alex Smith, he protected the football well last year. Only 5 interceptions last year. So he's protecting the football. And this team as a whole protects the football. They don't beat themselves. And that's big. That's big. You don't beat yourself. And that's what they did. They didn't beat themselves. They did not beat themselves. And that's one of the reasons they got where they went. They went as far as they did. And that is the reason they were this close to beating the New York Giants. This close. This close to beating the New York Giants. The reason why it is because of their defense, because of their running game, but also because of their ability to protect the football. And you look at, conversely, the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that hasn't been protecting the football, but a team that is 3-2. They are 3-2, even though they haven't protected the football. They are 3-2. But imagine if they would have protected the football. Imagine if they wouldn't have turned the football over the way they have. Just imagine. Just imagine. You're talking about a team that's maybe 5-0 in the Eagles. Maybe a 5-0 football team. Turnovers are a great equalizer. Are a great equalizer. You got to protect the football. You got to protect the football. And the San Francisco 49ers over the years have protected the, well, over the last year and even this year at this point, have protected the football. And because they have protected the football, this team is where they're at. This team is 4-1. This team is one of the better teams in football. And this team, you could argue, is the best team in football. And when it's all said and done, this is going to be a tough team to beat. This is going to be a very tough team to beat when it's all said and done. This is going to be a tough team to beat. You always hate playing against those teams that don't hurt themselves, who play fundamentally sound football, who do everything in their ability to protect the football. You always hate to get, always hate to play those teams that don't hurt themselves. You always hate to play against those type of teams. And the 49ers, with the defense they have, and with the play they're getting at Alex Smith, and with the running game they have with Frank Gore, they're going to be a tough team to beat. They really are going to be a tough team to beat when it's all said and done. And I think the Giants are going to have a tough time beating this team in San Francisco. I really do. I really do. Especially after what happened in that NFC title game. There's a Giant team a 49er team, that I should say, that is probably smarting from that game. A game that was very, very winnable. A game that they probably should have won. That's a game they probably should have won. And I think they'll turn around this week and win it. I think the Niners win this game against the New York Giants. I really do. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, the New York Giants are no slouch. Eli is an elite quarterback. Eli puts up numbers. Eli moves his team up and down the field. Up and down the field. You can run the ball against the Giants. You can run the ball against this team. And you wonder if Frank Gore is going to have a big day against this Giants defense. You can run the ball. You can run the ball. I mean, this team is 16th in stopping the run, giving up 111 yards per game. So you can run the ball against this team. You really can. And the secondary hasn't been playing too well either. So you can move the ball on this Giants offense. You can move the ball against this Giants offense. You really can. There are opportunities against this Giants offense. And I believe that the 49ers will take advantage of those opportunities by running the football. By running the football with Frank Gore. I think the 49ers may even blow the Giants out here. I don't know how close this game is going to be. And I'm putting it all together, the tough NFC title loss, the way the 49ers are playing now, their ability to run the football. I mean, this team is first in rushing yards, first in rushing yards. So they run the ball very, very well. They run the ball very, very well. And we talk about Alex Smith and his quarterback rating. We talk about his quarterback rating and everything, but they are only 27th in passing yards in the league. But they run the ball very well. They run the ball very well. You want to put them in a position where, in my opinion, where Alex Smith is the guy that has to beat you. I think that's what you want to do. You want to put them in a position where Alex Smith is the guy that has to beat you. Where Alex Smith is the guy that has to beat you. That's what you want to do. That's what you want to do. And as far as I'm concerned, the Giants can do it. But in terms of the stats and everything, the 49ers have had a lot of success running the football. The Giants have had some trouble stopping the football, stopping the running game. And so with all that being said, you have to say advantage 49ers. But again, if you can make Alex Smith have to beat you, you're in a good situation. If you can make Alex Smith beat you, you're in a good situation. You want to put him in a position where he has to beat you. You want Alex Smith to be in that position where he is the guy who has to beat you. The 49ers, you want to be in a situation where the 49ers have to win, not because of Frank Gore, not because of anything else, but Alex Smith. And that's what you want if you're a team. The question is, can the Giants do it? Can the Giants make it that type of football game? And Alex Smith, he started 16 games last year for the 49ers, but only threw the ball 445 times. And I believe that's the lowest. I believe that was one of the lowest out of any quarterback that started 16 games last year. So you have to put that team in a position where Alex Smith is the guy, where he has to put up the points in order for this team to be successful. That's what you want. Can the Giants do it with the way this team runs the football and the way the Giants have been stopping the run? Can, and Brandon Weeden, the Cleveland Browns, had some success last week against the Giants defense. They had some success last week against the Giants defense, but Eli, Victor Cruz, and those boys, and the kind of numbers they can put up, and the type of things that they can do on the offensive side of the football had nothing to, they weren't having it. The Giants were down 14-0 earlier in that game, but they came on back and stormed back. And Eli Manning was big in that particular football game. And ultimately, the New York football Giants played like Giants after being down 14-0 in that fourth quarter. From that point on, they played like Giants, put up 41 big points against that Browns defense. And the question I know a lot of people are talking about is whether or not the Browns will actually win a game this year. Will the Browns go to 0-16, a la the Detroit Lions a few years back? Is that next for the Cleveland Browns? Or are they going to be an 0-16 team? We'll see. They've been close. But this is a team that right now, with Brandon Weeden as their quarterback, and they're going to struggle. They're going to struggle. And at this point, I can't see the Browns. If we'll maybe win one or two at the most. I mean, it's kind of hard to go through a season and not win once. That's hard to do. That's hard to do. And not win one time? It's pretty hard to do. Very hard to do. So, we'll see. If they can turn things around, well, they're not going to turn things around, in turn, but we'll see if they can win a game. We'll see if they can win a football game. You have your doubts about that. You have your doubts whether or not they can win this football game. I have mine. I truly have my doubts. And we talked about this earlier with Willie Rowe, but the Green Bay Packers, a team that's 2-3. And would you have ever thought after 5 weeks of football that the Saints and the Green Bay Packers would have a combined total of 3 wins after 5 weeks of football? That's amazing. Amazing. And that's all you need to know about the National Football League, folks. You know, we all give our predictions, who's going to win the Super Bowl, who's going to win the division, who's going to do this and who's going to do that. But let's be real. You don't know. You don't know. You don't know. You really don't know. I mean, the Minnesota Vikings are 4-1. Who expected that? Who expected the Minnesota Vikings to be 4-1? I don't think anybody expected that. And if you said you did, I'd call a liar right to your face. I'd call you a liar right to your face. I would call you a flat-out lie. You a lie. If you thought the Minnesota Vikings would be 4-1 after 5 weeks. And this is a team that beat the mighty San Francisco 49ers. You can argue beating Jacksonville, not that big of a deal. You can argue beating the Lions at this point, as the Lions are 1-3, and I think they'll be 1-4 after tomorrow in Philadelphia. You can argue that that's not that impressive. Beating the Titans, they did beat the Titans 30-7. But this Titan team did beat the Steelers. They did beat the Steelers. But when it's all said and done, that may not be saying much. But this Viking team did beat the San Francisco 49ers. And that's a team that many believe is the best team in football. So you tell me. You tell me in terms of the Vikings. I'm not a believer just yet. I wouldn't be surprised they came back to the pack. I mean, Christian Ponder, their quarterback, is a guy who's managing the game well. He is managing the game well. He definitely is. He has a 95.5 quarterback rating. That's not bad. 6 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. That's not bad. That's not bad. But I think a la an Alex Smith, let's put Christian Ponder in a position where he has to win the football game. Let's put him in a position where he has to win a football game. Let's do that. And then let's see what happens. Let's put him in a position where he has to win a football game, where he has to get a little uncomfortable. Let's put him in that position. Let's put him in that position. That to me will tell us whether or not the Vikings are for real. They're getting it done on the defensive side of football. They're getting it done on the defensive side of football. But in terms of what's going on with Christian Ponder, that's going to be my to me, that's where the Vikings may fall short. That's where the Vikings may fall short. And that is with their quarterback play and Christian Ponder. That's where they may fall short to me. That's where I see this team falling short. That's where I see this team falling short. But the thing about the Vikings, they're 4-1. Don't matter how you do it, they're 4-1. Their defense is only giving up 15 points a game. So the defense is keeping them in games. The defense is keeping them in games. and Christian Ponder, Adrian Peterson, and those guys are making the plays. But the defense is keeping them in games. Keeping them in games. So if that defense can continue to keep them in games, if you're giving up only 15 points a game, you're keeping your team in a football game. You're giving your offense an opportunity to win. You're giving your team as a whole an opportunity to win. You're giving them that opportunity to win. You're giving them the opportunity. And so if you can, as a defense, can keep your team in a game, the way the Vikings defense has, giving up only 15 points a game. And, you know, don't we could talk about yards and all those other defensive numbers. Points per game is the biggest stat to me. That's telling me whether or not you're keeping your team in the football game. And his defense is keeping their team in the football game. They're keeping the team in the football. They're keeping their team in the football game. That's what that defense is doing for the Minnesota Vikings. And that is one of the reasons they're where they're at. That is one of the reasons they're 4-1 on top of the NFC North. The Green Bay Packers are 2-3. When you see that, that's shocking. Shocking. The 2-3 Green Bay Packers don't even sound right. The 1-4 New Orleans Saints don't even sound right. But the 4-1 Minnesota Vikings don't even sound right. Doesn't sound right. But it is what it is. It is what it is, folks. And there's no getting around it. It is what it is. And I'm even shocked by the 2-3 Denver Broncos. I'm shocked by the 2-3 Broncos at this point. That was a team I had going to the Super Bowl. There's a lot of things I'm a little surprised at, a little shocked by. But it is what it is, really, at this point. You are what you are. That's a great Bill Parcells would like to say. You are what you are. You are what you are, and the Packers are 2-3. You could argue they should be 3-2 because of the whole Golden Tate situation. But it is what it is. It is what it is. And right now, the Green Bay Packers are 2-3, and the Lions are 1-3. So the two of the teams that were on top of the NFC North a year ago are at the bottom. And I don't see it getting much better for the Detroit Lions. I really don't. I think they're going to lose this week against the Eagles. This is a team that I said would not make the playoffs, And this is a team a year ago, yes, we were all excited about the Lions, won 10 big football games and got to the playoffs where they would lose to the New Orleans Saints. But name me a team that the Lions beat last year that had a winning record. Name me a team that the Lions beat last year that had a winning record. You can't, right? Because they didn't. They didn't beat a team last year with a winning record. They did not beat a team last year with a winning record. So, say what you want about the Lions. But I have my doubts about this defense, this team. And I have my doubts about that defense. I think that defense is going to be good enough. And they weren't good enough last year. They are 10th in defense, total defense, but guess what? Guess what they're doing? They're giving up 28.5 points a game. That's not keeping your team in a football game. Giving up those amount of points is not keeping your team in a football game. It's not. Giving up 28.5 points per game. You can't give up those type of points and expect to be a successful football team. Unless your offense is putting up crazy numbers. But you're giving up 28.5 points per game. That's not a recipe for success. That's a recipe for disaster. That's a recipe for disaster. So, the Lions need to turn this thing around. The Lions definitely need to turn this thing around on the defensive end, at least if they want to be successful. It's not going to happen, folks. I think the Lions are going to go to 1-4 after tomorrow if they play the Eagles. They'll be 1-4. They're going to lose to the Eagles in Philadelphia. And from this point on, the Lions are a team right now. They're a team that I think will not make the playoffs, as I said, at the beginning of the year. And I'm going to stick by that. They will not turn it around. The Lions are what they are. They are what they are. They are what they are. They are what they are. And I don't see them turning this thing around. I really don't. I could be wrong. Been wrong before. Been wrong many times. Been wrong many times. I don't expect to be wrong this time here, though. I really don't. Matthew Stafford's not putting up the kind of numbers that he put up a year ago. He's not. Not putting up the type of numbers he put up a year ago. Only has 3 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. Those are not the numbers that Matthew Stafford put up a year ago. I mean, Matthew Stafford a year ago was a 5,000-yard passer. He was a 5,000-yard passer. A 5,000-yard passer, Matthew Stafford was a year ago. 5,000 yards. 41 big touchdowns a year ago. He's struggling right now. The Lions are a team that is struggling right now. And a team that I think will fall to 4-1, 1-4, I should say, after they play the Eagles tomorrow. I don't see the Lions turning this thing around. I really don't. I really don't. I'd be shocked if they do. Be shocked if they do. Absolutely shocked if they do. Well, I shouldn't be shocked because there is talent. I mean, Calvin Johnson and those boys, the things that they can do. You still have Matthew Stafford, who's coming off a very good year. So there is talent there. Their tight end, Brandon Pettigrew, who was good a year ago, but is dropping the football a lot this year for the Detroit Lions. I mean, this is a team that I have my doubts on whether or not they can turn this around. I have my doubts on whether they can turn this around. I don't think they will. I don't think they will. But I do look at the NFC North and I say, okay, we have Minnesota up there 4-1. That's going to change. That's going to change. They're going to switch spots with the Green Bay Packers when it's all said and done. And I say, as I told you in the schedule, they have 3 winnable games after they get by the Texans, meaning the Packers. And if they can get by the Texans with a win, if they can go to Houston and get a victory, and I don't doubt that they can, especially with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, I can't doubt you. But if they can go in there and get a win, they'll be 3-3. And then, as I said before, I said to Willie Rofe, 3 manageable football games. The Rams, they go travel to St. Louis. That's a winnable game. Then they go travel. And then they have Arizona and Jacksonville. Arizona and Jacksonville coming to Lambeau. So they have 3 winnable games after this one. 3 winnable football games. So they can easily turn this thing around. They can easily turn this thing around. And I think they will turn this thing around. I think they will turn this thing around. They'll still make the playoffs. They may not win a division as I first thought. but they'll get to the playoffs. Yeah, Minnesota going to Washington, I think a game that they lose. Looking at Minnesota's schedule moving forward, it's not a bad schedule. It's a manageable schedule. That's if you believe Minnesota is who you think they are. That's if you believe who you, Minnesota is. That's if you believe Minnesota is who you think they are. That's if you believe that. I don't know if I have that belief. I don't know if I have that belief. Matter of fact, I know I don't. But it could change. Things change. Things definitely change. Things can change. But I have my doubts. I have my doubts against about the Minnesota Vikings. They're 4-1 now. Right now they look like they could get to the playoffs. They look like that team. I have my doubts. I really do. I really do. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I may be wrong. I may be wrong. Doubt it. I doubt it. But I've been wrong before. I've been wrong before. But we'll see. We'll see. A lot of great football to be played. A lot of football left. A whole lot of football left. A whole lot of football left. A lot of football to be played. We're still only in October. It's just starting to get a little cold around the country. But we're only in October right now. So a whole lot of football that can be played at this point. A whole lot of football. A whole lot of football that will be played at this point. So, should be interesting to see what transpires moving forward and throughout the course of this year, as this year continues on and motors on. Nothing like NFL football. Nothing like it. It's America's game. It truly is America's game. America loves the NFL. Americans love the NFL. Fantasy football, suicide pools, so on and so forth. You name it, Americans love it. Americans love it. They love it. Absolutely love it. They love it. And one thing that I don't love, and you know, you get tired of hearing it, hearing about it at this point, is the whole Saints bounty thing. Bounty scandal. I mean, at this point, it is what it is, but Roger Goodell did uphold the suspension to Jonathan Vilma. He still has a year. Will Smith still has his games. Vegeta got dropped one game, and Hargrove, who had 8, got dropped to 7. I don't know what he heard, meaning Roger Goodell, that could drop a from 8 to 7. I mean, so. But it's only a 2-game ban for Hargrove, so because he was given credit for games played. But Jonathan Vilma, if things don't turn around for him, he will get 6 game checks. So that's good for him and his family. But this whole thing now is just, it's just, you get tired of hearing about it, really. You really do. I mean, I know what Vilma is trying to do now is he's trying to get it where Roger Goodell would recuse himself and not make the decision or take the appeal in terms of this. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing because on some level you have Jonathan Vilma who has a defamation lawsuit against Roger Goodell. So to me, theoretically, it could be personal on some level. I don't think how it could not be personal on some level. I mean, let's look at it here. Roger Goodell is, you know, the commissioner of the league and a guy you have a lawsuit against. This is a guy you have a lawsuit against. You have a lawsuit against this guy. You have a lawsuit against Roger Goodell. You don't think it's personal for him? It has to be. I don't know how it couldn't be. Somebody has a lawsuit out against me, and I'm deciding their fate? You think I'm going to be partial? I don't know how I could be partial, to be honest with you. I really don't know how I could be partial there. I don't know how anybody could be partial. He's basically saying that Roger Goodell is defaming him, is lying about him. So he's calling Roger Goodell a liar. What would you do if I called you a liar? And then you had the opportunity to determine whether or not I did something. How nice would you be to me? Well, would you give me the benefit of the doubt? Probably not. Probably not. So I think it could be personal. It could be personal. It really could. It really could be personal. It really could be personal. But the players have appealed, and the players are also asking, again, that Roger Goodell recuse himself. They believe he can't be impartial. And I'm not saying there's the players still can play and do what they have to do pending the appeal as the appeal process works out. And John DeVille is prepared to make a return October 21st, according to some reports. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. I hope they can work this whole thing out. And to me, working this whole thing out means, as far as I'm concerned, is these guys getting back on the field or something to that degree. Something to that. So hopefully they can work it out on that level. But it's just the situation that the thing that you just can't get away from, the thing that just will not go away. It will not go away. Just won't. But speaking of the Saints, and let's talk some happy things about the New Orleans Saints. Drew Brees breaks a record that lasted for 52 years. A 52-year record. 52-year record. 52 years. It's a long time. That's a long time. Very long time. 52 years. And a record that could be broken by not only Drew Brees, but Tom Brady, who's at 37. So if he continues at a touchdown a game pace, which is very possible, he could break Johnny Unitas' record by the year's end. So in the past 2 years, we will have it now where someone has broken Dan Marino's record for yards passing in a season, and also where someone would have, maybe two people would break Johnny Unitas' record for at least one touchdown in 47 consecutive games. That's possible that those two records could be broken in a span of 2 years. Now, you could argue maybe it's sort of like the home run record where you have McGuire who broke it in 1998. Then 3 years later, you have Bonds who shatters the record. So, who knows? I mean, who knows? And we all know why Bonds and McGuire were able to break those records. And you could argue we know why Brees is able to break the record and why Brady possibly could be breaking a record, and why Stafford threw for five and Brees threw for five a year ago. I mean, all these guys threw for 5,000 big yards. Brees, 5,000. Brady, 5,000. Stafford, 5,000. We had three players have over 5,000 yards passing. Three players. And he had Eli, it was 67 yards away from 5,000. So three quarterbacks with 5,000 big yards last year. And now there's a chance now where you'll have it where Tom Brady, who is now 10 games behind Johnny Unitas' record at 37, Unitas' record is 47, Brady could break it by year's end. Year's end, Brady could break it. That's by year's end. Tom Brady could break it. And I wouldn't be shocked if he did. Would not be shocked if he did. Would not be shocked at all. And the last time that Drew Brees won a game without throwing a touchdown pass was back in 2009, a Super Bowl winning season against the New York Jets, a game where they would win, meeting the Saints 24-10. But a game that Drew Brees, the great Drew Brees, was 20-32, very ordinary in that game, 20-32. With only 190 yards passing. That's not Drew Brees like. Especially that year, 2009, Drew Brees was off the charts in that game. Off that year, I should say. Drew Brees was off the charts that year. 4,300 yards, close to 4,400 yards, 34 big touchdowns, and only 11 interceptions, and a QB rating of 109. 109 QB rating, which was best in the NFL that year. So Drew Brees was big that year in 2009. And, you know, I guess we could say, you know what, maybe because of the rule changes. And you remember in the early 2000s, they really came down hard on defensive holding and illegal contact and those calls. And so You wonder. I mean, to me, I'm impressed by this record. A, it lasted 52 years. B, to play 48 games in the National Football League is impressive. That's 3 years. That's impressive. To play 48 NFL football games when the average career is 3.5 years, that's impressive. And then, I mean, look at Drew Brees over the years. This guy's been a pillar of health. The pillar of health over the years. I mean, 2005, 16, 16, 2006, 16, 2007, 16, 2008, 2009. Played 15 games, and he set out one game. That was just a rest. That was just a resting situation. That was a resting situation there during the Super Bowl year, the game that really didn't matter to the team. I mean, 2010, 16, 2011, 16 games. I mean, the guy's been a pillar of health ever since he had the issue with the shoulder, but that was the end of his last year in San Diego. And it was ironic that he was able to break it against San Diego, a team that decided to go to Phillip Rivers. Not an awful decision at all. But if you're the Chargers, would you rather have Drew Brees or would you rather have Phillip Rivers? I think you'd probably say you'd rather have Drew Brees. Though it's not a landslide situation, though it's not that far. It's not that cut and dry. It's not that cut and dry, but again, if gun to the head and you had to make a decision, if you're the San Diego Chargers, of what quarterback you want, whether it be Drew Brees or whether it be Phillip Rivers, think the decisions you would make, and I think where you would go is Drew Brees. You probably would take Drew Brees over Phillip Rivers. you probably would. I mean, Drew Brees is a top five QB in this league. Rivers, you can argue, is a top 10. Brees is top five. You can argue, you may even be able to argue top three. Top two, you could argue. The numbers don't lie. 5,000 big yards. 5,000 big yards for Drew Brees. 5,000 big yards for Drew Brees. 5,000. 5,000. Big yards for Drew Brees in 2009. Absolutely impressive. Not 2009, 2011. And then to play 48 games and to not only get out there, but to be successful in terms of throwing touchdown passes. Throw at least one in 48 games, straight games. That's impressive. That's impressive. I don't care what era of football you play in. That's impressive. Even McGuire and Barry Bonds hitting the home runs that they hit. I don't care what era of baseball you're in. That's impressive. Is it a little inflated? Sure. Definitely. Definitely argue that's it's a little inflated. Cool. Of course you can. But we all know what those guys did. They put themselves in that position. We all know what they did. We all know what they did. What Drew Brees has done is follow the rules and use the rules to his benefit. You know, I mean, at this point, the way they're calling pass interference penalties in this league, you almost think that instead of it being a spot foul, the pass interference calls, maybe it should go to a 15-yard penalty like it is in college. I don't think it should be a spot foul no longer. It's just becoming too much of an advantage for the offense. I mean, you could just throw the football in the air, and if there's any type of contact, it's more likely going to go in favor of the offense. That's not the way it should be. This is not the way it should be. Football should not be that way. Should not be that way. But it is what it is. It is what it is. The rules are the rules. The rules are the rules. The rules are the rules. And you play by those rules. But as far as I'm concerned, what the way they're calling pass interference, it needs to be a 15-yard penalty. It needs to be a 15-yard penalty. And I'm almost thinking of illegal contact, defensive holding. I'm wondering if that should be an automatic first down. I'm wondering about that. And again, I know why they're doing it. They want points to go up. They want teams to score a lot of points. They want fans love points. I love seeing a lot of points. I'm not a guy that wants to see a lot of points. I'm not that guy. I'm more of a purist, more of a diehard. I'm going to watch regardless. They want the casual fan to watch all the time. They want to watch. If you want to watch a whole bunch of points being scored, go watch arena football, as far as I'm concerned. Go watch arena football. If you want to see players putting up crazy numbers and doing those things, watch arena football. Go watch arena football, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in seeing shootouts and 40 to 45 games. And I'm not interested in that. But oh well. I want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by, and we were expected to be joined by Keith McKenzie and Cliff Floyd. That didn't happen, obviously, and hopefully we can try to work them in sometime in the future. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Follow the show on Twitter at Go For It Camp. For everybody here, Go For It. See you later. Take care.